Hello to our listeners. Welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Courtney Camlett, and my co-host is Liz Dunchy.
Hi, everyone.
Liz and I are both passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the amazing women who share that passion. We're connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what surprised them in their career and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we're talking with Anat Alon-Beck. Anat is an associate professor of law at the Case Western Reserve University School of Law. She has been dubbed Unicorn Lady because of her work studying those firms. Her research has been cited to Congress, the SEC, and federal courts, and she's widely read through her Forbes column and other media commentary. Anat also focuses on corporate governance, responsible and sustainable business models, and new social paradigms. She has previously worked as an international business and management professor, mergers and acquisitions corporate, and high-tech lawyer, and she is passionate about empowering women to advance in entrepreneurship and leadership positions in the business world. We are very excited to be talking with you today, Anat. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you so much for being here, Anat. You have quite the background, and so we're very excited to be talking with you. Tell us and our audience a little bit about your career path. I'm curious how you found your way into academia and what led to your interest in corporate governance and then your various subspecialties within that.
Sure, thank you. So I honestly, when I was just starting as a law student, I never thought that I was going to go into the corporate world. I was very much an activist. I used to be very interested in civil rights and human rights. And I did pro bono in Israel, in New York, in other places, in clinics, represented a lot of people. And then I was recruited, to my surprise, by the largest law firms. And I was like, are you sure you want me? And they're like, yes, we want you for corporate law, mergers and acquisitions. it was shocking to me. Although I will say I was a research assistant to a very famous corporate law professor. So that could have, that probably.
Interesting.
Yes, I always loved the business world.
Yeah.
I just never thought, I come from a background that's very conservative, and in that, you know, women don't necessarily go to corporate positions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of my rebellion, I guess.
Very interesting.
I ended up in corporate law representing startups and mergers and acquisitions in Israel while it was just beginning. Israel was booming. And I speak several languages and had that understanding of corporate law. And so that was really the first time I was exposed to startups and corporate governance in sort of startups. And then I moved to New York and I continued to represent startups in New York. And I noticed that the deals were different, whether you're in Silicon Valley or New York or Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
Firms were different back then. We're talking about 20 years ago. And I also thought that I saw this shift in the market. At least I thought I started recognizing it. And that is from public markets to private markets. And I felt that not enough people are covering that. And that's how I got into academia. I wanted to explore what's going on in the market. What are the different changes that we're going to observe? And I started writing on this.
Very interesting. And you've published a lot. Your published research has influenced conversations and policy on a variety of high profile corporate governance and securities law issues, including board diversity and human capital and corporate purpose, risk oversight, public benefit corporations, and the ways in which direct listings, the proliferation of unicorn and fintech innovations affect the health of our capital markets. Is there a common thread that ties these topics together? And is there any recent or forthcoming research that you want to highlight for our listeners?
So I'm particularly interested with regards to the common thread in examining how the legal and regulatory structures influence this shift that I told you about equities from public markets to private markets, and how does that affect overall entrepreneurial opportunities and new firm formations? And really, I was thinking about it in kind of two strands of research. One is I was documenting the rise in these new type of firms that I've never seen before while I was practicing, and that is these unicorn firms, right? We have these privately held venture capital-backed startups that are valued at over $1 billion. And I've never seen that in practice. Okay, so this whole thing was very new to me. I was intrigued. And I was wondering, how does that change the dynamics with stakeholders, with shareholders, managers, employees? And the second strand that always was very close to my heart with regards to corporate governance is really about responsible and sustainable business strategies, models, operations, investments, new social paradigms, because I could see society changing, right? Values changing. And I was wondering, how is that going to affect corporate governance and how the gatekeepers, really the attorneys, need to deal with that? Now, with regards to some of my newer research that's coming up, I'm looking at competitive federalism. You're all probably familiar with the fact that, you know, in March 2023, this year, Elon Musk, right, the tech titan, opened up three new firms in Nevada. And you're probably wondering, Nevada? Why Nevada? Why not Delaware? I was wondering as well. And he opened X Holdings, X Corporation, XAI. We all know why today. At the time, nobody knew what was going on. I was trying to snoop around and see what's going on. And what we know today, right, fast forward, is that he decided to rebrand Twitter. And he decided to replace Twitter's bird logo with X. But it's not the only decision. What he also did was he merged Twitter, the Delaware corporation, into a Nevada corporation, where the surviving entity is a Nevada entity. And so what I'm looking at now is this something that we think that Delaware has something to be concerned about? Is Nevada going to take over this business of incorporation? I personally don't think so. I think of Nevada as more of a market for lemons. And I think it's a signaling tool, right? Yeah. And if we see companies choosing Nevada over Delaware, right, because of the exculpation provisions, and in Nevada, they're more protective, right, of directors and officers. It's going to be very hard to sue for a breach of fiduciary liability in Nevada. Even if we're talking about the duty of loyalty and the duty of good faith. And so I think it's more of a market for lemons, right? And I would be very surprised if more private companies are going to move to Nevada. Don't forget, Twitter is now private. It's no longer a public company.
Good point.
And I have this empirical research where I found that most of the unicorns in the United States, guess where they're incorporated? In Delaware. Okay. So, because they're going to want to go public at some point, right? They're semi-public to me. They're quasi-public. And so I don't think that Delaware has anything to worry about with regards to that. Good companies are still going to go to Delaware.
Because investors tend to be more comfortable with both the statute and the predictability of the courts in Delaware, probably.
Exactly. And we have professional judges who know corporate law and you know what to expect. And that's why I interviewed so much during the Musk trial, right? That was, you know, the Twitter trial. We knew that's the whole point. Delaware is efficient, it's predictable, and it lowers the cost of doing business. And that's what businesses want, right?
Yeah.
There's lots of case law in Delaware that people can rely upon. So it's also, you know, nice from that perspective for companies.
Absolutely. But where I think the changes are going to come from is actually from the federal government, right? From our securities law. And so what I'm also seeing is that we have securities laws that are creeping into corporate governance. So who's going to dictate what's good corporate governance, right? Think about the fact that we have all this litigation now with private tech firms, right? We have all these cases. We have all these fraud going on. And you don't really have public shareholders there. You have private shareholders.
Right.
And so this is going to be interesting to see the federal government intervening in this and dictating what's going to be corporate governance going forward.
Never a dull moment around here. Well, given all your thought leadership in this space and your interest in looking ahead for what might be in store for all of us in the future, do you think that there are legal and regulatory reforms that would improve opportunities for corporate governance and securities practitioners and our markets overall? And in asking that question, I acknowledge that that's a super complex topic that you could probably speak to all day long.
Yes.
But give us kind of your elevator pitch on what that could look like and what our audience, who's a lot of, corporate governance and securities practitioners, could do from a practical perspective to support some of that.
Sure. So I will honestly, I just want to briefly touch on three topics that I think are going to be hot topics in the future. One is due diligence. We've seen regulators noting the fact that due diligence does not look like what it used to 20 years ago when I used to practice. And so I think due diligence, lawyers, you're the gatekeepers, pay attention to due diligence practices. Because what I was seeing, again, before this slowdown, is that deals were done so quickly that I was wondering myself, what about the due diligence process? Okay. And that is something that we do as lawyers, right? Oh, I did think one of them, right? There's the financial aspects and there's the legal aspects. So I would say go back to the fundamentals, make sure you are doing justice to your client and doing the due diligence properly. That's one. Second issue is human capital. I think we're going to continue to see that evolve. By human capital, I mean the employees. Unfortunately, currently, it's not new. It's actually in the last 2 decades, corporate governance scholarship really neglected the role of employees. And instead, we just focused on the relationship with directors, with managers, with shareholders. And today, there is a paradigm shift. And as lawyers, we need to take that into account. You need to take talent, human capital, and culture in corporate governance. You just cannot avoid that. That's the future. You need to incorporate that into your practice. The third one is diversity, diversity and diversity and ESG. I know it's hard. I know it's politically charged, but I'm happy to talk a little bit more about what does that mean, right? What is it that we should be doing in this regard? And I understand the challenges. Again, when politics are involved, it becomes a contested area.
Yeah, and diversity seems particularly challenging right now in light of the actions that some organizations are taking in response to the Supreme Court ruling on affirmative action. And companies have done a lot with their DEI initiatives and incentives over the past few years, but maybe the way that they are communicating those hasn't been as tight as what maybe it should have been from an employment perspective. So it seems like there will probably be more commentary and going back and forth on that.
Absolutely. And don't forget, we have fiduciary duty issues, right? And I think within the duty of loyalty, we need to take that into account. And otherwise, we're going to see a ton of lawsuits in this regard. That's, to the future. That's what I think.
I agree that human capital is also a hot topic, and Courtney is actually speaking on an upcoming panel on that for the Corporate Counsel Proxy Disclosure Conference in September. So totally agree with that one as well.
I am. And actually, so in addition to what you mentioned on human capital and diversity, what are your thoughts on the current corporate governance and ESG environment? I know that some boards and advisors feel caught in the middle of competing political agendas. I'm wondering whether there are theories or data that could guide decision making on sensitive topics without diverting too much time and money from the company's core mission.
Trust me, I absolutely feel for the managers, the directors, and the lawyers who represent them, because I know they get the phone calls and they're being asked, okay, what should we do, right? Unfortunately, ESG has emerged as a really a domestic political battleground today. And there's so much going on. It's enough to just take a look at Disney and DeSantis, right? It's just one example. But I still think let's go back to the basics. Right. If I had to talk to lawyers today, and they're the ones who are advising companies, I would tell them, let's go back to the basics. Let's go back to fiduciary duties. And I'm going to explain why. What you need to explain to your client is now they need to balance. It's a very delicate balancing act, right? Because on the one hand, you have different groups of stakeholders and you don't know who they are, and they could have opposing views. They could be very divided on ESG, right? And now every company is going to have their own circumstances, and they're going to have their own mission statements, and vision statements. By the way, be very careful with them because if you say you're going to do something and you don't, then you can get sued on that. Okay.
Absolutely.
And so, first, you need to approach ESG as a business issue. Think about the decision the managers are going to make. You know, it's a business decision. Think about the risks that are involved. Recognize the fact that there are political pressures and there could be a political and public outcry as a result. And so, first of all, note that there's Caremark, right? We have the Delaware Caremark decision. And that whenever they make a decision on ESG and on any ESG related issue, that's usually protected under the business judgment rule as long as it is informed. So you need to do several things. One is the board of directors and managers need to identify, they need to monitor, and they need to mitigate the risks. There needs to be discussion that they're taking all the risks into account. They need to consult outside experts, okay? Follow all the things that you would follow under other types of situations where you are considering risk, right? We know this. We've been telling clients what to do in other areas. This is just use that, okay? Now, some say that maybe staying silent could be prudent. If you can do that, you might be criticized for staying silent. So it's not always so easy. Okay, so again, it changes from company to company. But what I would do is again, think about the different compelling interests, have a discussion, make sure you follow all the formalities. I always tell my students, right? Paper and, right? You want to paper things, you want to make sure and process. You follow the correct processes that we have in place in corporate governance. We've had this for years, right? We know this. So follow the paper and process, the two P's, right? Make sure you paper it, make sure you follow the processes while you're making the decision. You show that you are aware of the risk, it's a calculated risk, and how you're dealing with the risk.
That's a great sort of tagline for students to remember, paper and process.
Yeah.
And a good framework for us all to work from. And you're right, going back to the basics and just making sure we remember what our jobs are and what we're here for. So thank you for that. Our last question, Annette, is one that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what do you think women in the corporate governance field can add to the current conversation on the role of corporations in society?
I think we have a lot to add, and I also think that there's a lot that needs to change. And I actually have two pieces on this, right? One is no more old boys club, and the other one is a duty to diversify. And I know that diversity is a highly contested issue today, again, but I do think that women bring a lot to the boardroom because there's been all these studies that show that it's not beneficial to have groupthink, and that somebody needs to challenge and somebody needs to ask the hard questions. And when you don't have that, you don't have that participation in the boardroom, then you don't have somebody asking those questions. You don't have that added value that you bring in. And so I do think that representation matters. It also matters for other people in the company, right? Because you cannot aspire to something if you don't see it. And so I think we need to have more representation. There's been some sort of improvement. Unfortunately, it's not enough. And look at what's happening in California, right? I mean, that's being challenged. There's so many lawsuits that are now being brought up, and I'm curious to see how that litigation is going to go. But what is clear is that it definitely helped. It brought the numbers up for California companies. And that's its own challenge. Think about that these companies are headquartered in California, but they are incorporated in Delaware, right? Another question is, how should Delaware courts look into this issue? Okay, with regards to fiduciary duties. And so again, it's a very complex issue. I do think that we need to have more representation. I also think that if we're looking at if institutional investors, I think that they have a fiduciary duty under the duty of loyalty to advance more diversity. It's great that they're saying they're going to do that. I think that today, after those statements, they have to do that. Okay, I think they're required to do that because they represent their beneficiaries. And so with regards to the BlackRocks of the world, I think it's great that they're making these statements. We're going to judge them by their actions.
And do you think they'll back down from any of those policies and statements that they've made?
They cannot, because they will get sued.
Once they
adopted those, I don't think they will.
Mm-hmm.
I will be very surprised if they will, but I could be wrong, right? I don't have a crystal ball, but if I did, I would think that they will continue to advance those goals. And again, as long as they're doing that under the duty of loyalty, under the fiduciary duties in Delaware, and we're looking at Caremark and they made the business decision, then they should be protected. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be as concerned about them getting sued. On the contrary, I think they can get sued under our securities laws if they say they're going to do something and they're not going to do that. Okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But on a normative level, I also think because they represent all of us and because of the different theories that show of why groupthink is not good for companies, I do think that they need to and they have a duty to advance more diversity on boards.
Well, that is the ideal state.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're at an interesting juncture right now.
Yep. But I'm hopeful that things will sort out to the better.
Yeah. Sorry, Courtney, I interrupted you.
No. I was just going to say I've been surprised and not in a good way a lot recently. So hopefully this won't continue on that path.
I know. It's so sad when it's being politicized. But I'm kind of an optimistic, so I'm hoping that things will get better. Plus, if you're looking at the next generation and they are going to be the savers and the investors, then I am hopeful again, because I think they will push for those issues.
Yeah.
All the more reason to model good behavior wherever you are.
Exactly.
Good point, exactly. Courtney.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for joining us on this podcast, Anat.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thanks to our listeners. Please subscribe on whatever platform you use for podcasts, and we would love if you would rate us while you're there. In addition, if you know a women governance trailblazer who you think would be a great guest on the show, feel free to ping Liz or me either on LinkedIn or by email.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Anat.
Thank you.